This is It Takes Two. Amy Eiler, J.D. Gordon here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And on the phone line with us now is Elliot Haspel. He's an early childhood and K-12 education policy expert and writer. He's got a book as well. Elliot, welcome to KFGO Radio in Fargo.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. First, we should make a shout out for your book. You did write a book, correct? And they can order it.
Yes, they can. It's called A Crawling Behind America's Child Care Crisis and How to Fix It. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of those sites.
We should. That could be a whole hour of radio or 17 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking about child care, you recently wrote an op-ed that I thought was interesting about child care during the pandemic. It's been really confusing how to go forward. And in our case, JJ and I have remained on the radio. My husband has remained at his job. You know, we have had to keep moving forward. And in my case, I've been really lucky because my child care center did not shut down at all. And they have remained open. They have not reported any COVID cases to any of the families. And they have been very transparent. And I think that we would know if something was happening or going through that building. So it's an interesting thing to see it go through all of these places like meat processing facilities and nursing home facilities. I have to imagine that maybe it is going through child care facilities and we just can't tell, Elliot.
So it's interesting. What we know, and we don't have anything conclusive, but all of the evidence seems to suggest that the children are actually sort of a special sort of status when it comes to COVID-19. And in most pandemics, children and the elderly are both hit really hard. This one, for somewhat unknown reasons still, children appear to be somewhat protected. And it's really good news. So we have a lot of encouragement. Children can catch it and they can transmit it to adults. But they do those, it appears, at much lower rates than adults. So what we're learning is that the kids pretty rarely catch it. When they do, it is almost always really mild. And there's actually not that many examples of recorded cases of children transmitting it to other children or to adults. So, you know, we are seeing some cases pop up in child care centers, but it's nothing like what we're seeing in, you know, the other sort of settings that you mentioned there.
It's very confusing. And I think it's been very confusing and hard. And for child care facilities to decide what to do during this time, Elliot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been confusing to think about, you know, do you even stay open? And then, you know, what precautions do you take to make sure that you're lowering the risk as much as possible? And, you know, some of what I've written about is I think we know enough now that some of those precautions we know are really prudent, and some other ones might not be as quite as important as we used to think.
Okay, so break down some of those examples of what you think is important and what isn't.
Yeah, so for example, we know that if children aren't quite as susceptible, one of the most important things is you have to keep the adults, the staff members, the teachers, the parents safe from one another. So things like making sure that if any staff member is feeling sick at all, that they feel comfortable staying home and they know that, you know, they're going to be paid for that or whatever they need so that they can not come into work sick. You know, staggering drop off and arrival time so that you have less parents showing up in the lobby or, you know, outside the doors of the center together at any one time. Those sorts of things are important. But if you think about something like children bring their like comfort objects from home, right? Like that we know that little kids really like their you know, stuffed animals or their blanket or whatever. What we pretty much know is COVID doesn't stay on surfaces for all that long. That's not the major transmission vector. Kids aren't that susceptible to begin with. So you probably are going to be okay if your kid brings, you know, their stuffed animal to school. That's very, very low risk.
Well, that's good news.
Elliot, I'm curious. Obviously, the reopening child care centers is directly linked to part of our economy's health. It means that people can actually go back to work safely and for full shifts as they did before. I have to imagine that there's also another subgroup of the economy where without these, without having child care centers open or the ability to have as many children as they're allowed, it really hurts the bottom line for those small businesses as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes, child care, they sometimes say it's the industry that kind of underlies all the other industries, because it's really hard, like you said, to go work full shifts without that. And one thing that we're seeing is a lot of child care centers are really struggling to even stay afloat, because, child care was the system was badly underfunded to begin with. If you think about child care, mostly relies on parent fees to survive, as opposed to our public schools that have public money coming in. And now with having so many fewer parents coming, they're really struggling to stay afloat. By some estimates, the country might lose as much of a third of its child care supply permanently as a result of the pandemic. And that does have huge implications for the economic recovery. So, you start to put this story together where it seems like we can reopen child care pretty safely. We want to make sure that they're doing everything that's reasonable to keep kids and staff and parents safe. And we really need to make sure that they're getting the funds that they need to do that. Because that's the other problem, is you could have a center that says, I'm ready to open, we're ready to take kids, but you have parents that are really feeling so nervous or uncomfortable about the health implications that they don't bring their kids. And then just like a gym or a business that doesn't have enough customers coming in, right, it goes under. And then that's, an enormous problem for the economy.
So do we reopen schools in the fall?
So this is it's a complicated question, right? I come down the side of the American Academy of Pediatrics, who recently released their guidance that said, if at all possible, if the levels of community transmission in your, area are not super high, that should be the priority, is getting kids back in school, particularly young kids, so pre-K elementary school. The evidence for the teenagers is a little more sort of dicey. We don't have nearly as much. And these other countries we look at, like European countries that have been back in school for weeks and weeks and weeks with really no problem, they send their young kids back first. So their older kids have not been back as long. So, but yeah, the benefit of having children in school for their social well-being, their mental health of being around peers, their educational development, of course, seems to really be the benefit outweighs the risk of COVID to other students and the teachers. And again, we're going to see what we're seeing. Like, there will be some cases, but if 97-98% of schools can operate and be just fine, given that there's a cost of keeping kids home, on balance, that's what the, American Academy of Pediatrics, Dr. Fauci, even in his testimony today to the Senate, said, we should do everything possible to get our kids back in school. So there seems to be a growing kind of consensus from the medical community that it is safe enough, you can mitigate risk enough that the benefits of having kids back in their schools is worth it.
I love the point that you made about how, kids are needing this interpersonal time and this connection with people and these social interactions, but that they also need to be able to have meaningful conversations with teachers whose mouths are unobstructed by masks. And you also say, or who have adequate access to clear masks. That's what I need. I'm like, clear masks. Yes. Why don't we have lots of those? Because I have now noticed how much I almost read lips when I communicate with people. I'm asking people to repeat themselves all the time. And I don't know if it's because they are muffled by their mask or if it's because I'm unconsciously sort of reading people's lips sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a great point.
Yeah, and particularly true for the youngest children, right, who are still learning language and learning, or certain populations, students with hearing issues, that's much more useful. I think, having masks, we can be nuanced about this. Like, multiple things can be true at once, right? Like, teachers may not even want clear masks, or they may not need a mask if they're in front of the classroom of children. When that teacher is going to get his or her lunch out of the, refrigerator, they should probably be wearing a mask because they're going to be in close proximity to other adults. And that, you always go back to that. You want to protect the staff. You want to protect the adults from one another. That sort of becomes the leading sort of a priority here. And there are ways to do that. While still not completely throwing out like a quote unquote normal educational experience for the kids.
Well, Elliot Haspel has been with us. He is an early childhood and K-12 education policy expert and a writer. He has a book that you can check out called Crawling Behind America's Child Care Crisis and How to Fix It, and wrote a really interesting and I thought educational piece about why child care looks safe and how it's time to act like it. And I will put a link to that at kfgo.com after the show. Elliot, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.